On this St. Thomas Sunday, I want to speak with you about how the Christian faith deals with doubt, which is to say, it deals with it openly, honestly, and head on. Doubt is a natural part of the human experience. It actually serves some very useful purposes. You know, if somebody comes up to you and says, the sky is falling, you might want to just check before you start running around like a chicken with your head cut off. You might not want to just take them at their word. And Christianity, with the claims of the resurrection, asks us to believe some really hard stuff. And so I love the way the Orthodox Church deals with the question of doubt, particularly right here at the central moment of our faith, Pascha, the resurrection. We have just finished celebrating Pascha. Even as we were working through the Gospels, we had echoes of, for example, at the end of the 12 Passion Gospels. The very last Gospel reading talks about how, you know, they sort of were bribing the guards and saying, just tell them that the disciples came and stole them away while you slept. And it says this story is still believed very widely. And multiple other places, even in this celebration, the Gospels are really clear that, yeah, there's reasons why people don't believe. And some of those, you know, they make a certain, in human terms, they make a certain amount of sense. A certain amount. I mean, the guards being, the typical sentence for falling asleep on the job was getting your head chopped off. But this is hard stuff. It's hard to believe. And so this Sunday after Pascha, the Church presents us with St. Thomas and his struggle to believe, his doubt. Jesus appears to his disciples. He shows them his hands and his feet. I love how every translation, probably even in the original, it's inadequate to render what they say. It's like, the disciples were glad when they saw the Lord, or the disciples rejoiced when they saw the Lord. I can't imagine, just the amazing joy that must have been welling up in their hearts as they realized that Jesus wasn't actually dead. He was alive. There's no word, so, we'll stick with joy or glad or whatever. But there's no words to communicate to somebody who hasn't experienced it the joy of Pascha, the joy of the resurrection, the joy of realizing that Jesus is alive. And Thomas wasn't with them. He missed it. And of course, when the disciples meet Thomas again, they do what is quite natural to us. They want to share their joy with him. They want to share with him what they have seen, what they have experienced. And they're using everything in their power. They're using their words, they're using, their testimony, they're trying to convince him. Thomas is adamant. Unless I put my finger into the print of the nails and put my hand into his side, I will not believe. And then, a week later, they're all together. Thomas is with them this time. And Jesus comes and presents himself to them. And he then says to Thomas, come, put your finger into my hand, the print of the nails on my hands. Put your hand into my side. Be not unbelieving, but believing. And Thomas falls down before him and says, my Lord and my God. Jesus says to him, blessed are you because you have seen and believed. Blessed are they who have not seen and yet believe. There are a number of reasons why we doubt. And when we are facing doubt, when we are wrestling with, did this really happen? We do have to stop and ask ourselves a few questions. One reason why we doubt is we doubt the truthfulness of the witnesses. And in this case, Thomas had some pretty good reasons to doubt the truthfulness of the witnesses. Admittedly, he knew these guys, so he probably should have seen that they really believed what they were talking about. But you could make a case here. One of the primary witnesses in this group is a guy named Simon Peter. You might remember what Simon Peter did when he was confronted, just like a few days ago, or is it maybe even less than that, like just a day or two ago, when he was confronted and said, "You are a follower of Jesus." He outright lied. He denied it. Not once, but three times. Now, admittedly, he was scared. This is what we tend to do when we're scared. We cover up. We was like, okay, well, what do you want to hear? Let me tell you what we want. What you want to hear. And Peter was just doing what we all do, or are tempted at least to do in that circumstance. But this was a cruel blow. It meant that Jesus was utterly abandoned by his leading disciple. And it was an obvious hit to the credibility of Peter as a witness. You were just lying the other day. Three times. In public. Why should I believe you now? One of the things I love about the Gospels and about their how they relate the disciples to us is that they're very clear, not just here with Peter, but all throughout the Gospels, they're very clear that the disciples were human beings, messed up, just like us. They were arguing over who was going to be greatest in the kingdom of heaven. They wanted to call down fire upon a village because it didn't believe or it didn't receive Jesus. And Jesus was continually having to rebuke them and say, "How long am I going to have to put up with you guys? You have no faith." They didn't get it over and over and over again. And the Gospels are really clear about this. They're not hiding this. They're pretty open and honest about how messed up the disciples were. But even people who are messed up can be worthy of trust. Sometimes it's important to extend that trust and to say, okay, you really seem to believe this. Let's probe deeper. Let's figure this out. And in this case, what we would say proves the truthfulness of the apostles' testimony, or at least one of the things that proves it, is these guys all went to their graves as martyrs, witnessing to the truth of the resurrection. This changed them from a bunch of people who were hiding in a corner, hiding behind locked doors, to people who were going out and preaching out in the streets, even when they were told not to, as we heard in the epistle reading. They were thrown in prison and locked up. And they still went out and preached that Jesus was alive. They were willing to lay their lives on the line for this truth. So yeah, they're messed up witnesses just like we are. But this was something that they knew to be true and knew to be so significant that they were willing to risk their lives and to lay down their lives for this truth. Now, Thomas, of course, can't see all this. As I say, he should have. He had a few other reasons to believe this, but at that moment in time, he couldn't believe the disciples' witnesses. Another thing that we often wrestle with when we are struggling with doubt is actually not the truthfulness of the witnesses or the unbelievability of the thing that we're doubting. It's often our emotions. We are not as logical as we like to think we are. We think we're like Spock or Data, just able to, or a computer, able to think logically. But in fact, our emotions are always informing our perceptions. And in this case, Thomas was an emotional wreck. He had just spent 3 or more years of his life walking around with Jesus, loving this man, looking forward to the kingdom that he was going to inaugurate. He was willing to lay down his life for Jesus. When the other disciples were scared of going down with Jesus to Lazarus because they knew that the Jews wanted to kill him, Thomas was the one who spoke up. Let's all go down with him so that we can die with him. But at this point, he just didn't have any more emotional reserves to open himself up to any more hurt because he was devastated. He just couldn't bring himself to open himself up to joy because that joy might be crushed. And that is actually often a problem that people have with Christianity. It's too good to be true. And I've seen the horrors of this world and what this world does to us as it grinds us down, as it takes all that is good and crucifies it. And they have no emotional energy left to open themselves up to the possibility that this just might be real. Here I would say, if we're going to believe not like Thomas, without seeing, we have to very carefully examine ourselves, our emotions, our thoughts. How are they influencing us? What are they grounded in? What are they based on? Because we need to figure out whether this is true or not. We need to figure out whether we can believe. And even those of us who have believed, we still struggle. There are still times when it feels too good to be true. When the world is closing in around us and there's it just seems hopeless. But in that moment, we need to get past those emotions and go back to our own experience and to the witness of those who have gone before us. The collective witness of those who have gone down through the ages and have witnessed to the reality of the resurrection by their lives and by their words and deeds, triumphing like Christ over death itself. And we can fall back on that collective witness. And we can deal with our emotions and the things that are stressing us out and grinding us down by reaffirming that Christ is risen. Finally, the ultimate resolution here, which Thomas gets, is Jesus comes and appears to Thomas. He shows them his hand and his side, invites him to touch. And here I think there's a temptation for us in this video-centric age to really wish that, you know, maybe these things could have happened a little later in human history when we had, you know, the videotape recorder and we could have had, you know, when Jesus was buried at Heritage Gardens and there would have been video surveillance cameras that might have captured it and we could look at the footage and see. It seems like that would be handy, right? I think there's a reason that it didn't happen. Well, I know there's a reason it didn't happen at this point in human history. But I think maybe one of the reasons that that wasn't a reason that God decided, well, maybe we should have it a little later after they've gotten around to inventing cameras and stuff, is that all of that sort of thing doesn't give you, you know, video footage does not give us insight into what is going on in the human heart. And it doesn't actually give us a full and true picture. And it's still dependent, it's really only just pushing back the question of who do you trust? Because in this age of, you know, instant video, we go to war based on video footage. But it's still, there's still the question behind it, is it real? From the very beginning of cameras, some of the very first pictures that were taken were fake. Because like, oh, we found a new technology. Hey, this is really cool. Let's see how we can use it to trick people. Like the photos of the fairies that were taken, or nowadays you have to ask, was it staged? Is there any evidence that people have used Blender or Photoshop to alter this footage? And again, we're right back to where we started. What actually happened? What were the people who were there and who are witnessing to this, what are they like? Can we trust them? And I would say that given the openness and the honesty that we see in the gospel accounts, the gospel writers pull no punches, as I said, about the flaws of the disciples. Given the complexity of human emotion that we do have to sort through, but also given the depth of the reality of the experience of the disciples. And finally, given that our Lord himself accommodates Thomas's weakness, accommodates our, and by so doing accommodates all of our weakness, revealing himself to Thomas, inviting him to touch his hands and his side, saying that to him that he's blessed, that he now believes, and giving a special blessing for those of us who have not seen and yet have believed. Our God himself knows how difficult and how challenging it is for us to believe this. Our God himself knows how much we wrestle with the problem of and the horror of sin and its destructive power. Our God himself knows that we need it takes a miracle of faith for us to believe. And so he reveals himself to the disciples in all their flawed humanity. And so he reveals to us his love, not only in the resurrection, but even from the cross. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And he reveals to us the reality of the resurrection by accommodating our weakness. And we see him resurrected, not just through the remote experience of the disciples, not just through the witness of the saints, but we have seen and experienced his resurrection, his presence in our midst, just 1 week ago, at great and holy Pascha. And knowing that he can work in us, in our flawed humanity, in us, in our weakness, and in our emotionally wrecked state, and in us to reveal his presence to us in the joyful midst of the assembly, as we shout together, Christ is risen. We know that this is true. We can witness to this without fear, knowing that this is life-changing, and this is what will save us and will save the world. To his glory, glory of the God, the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Christ is risen.
He is risen.